Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Geoff Hutchison. Welcome, Geoff.
Very nice to be here, thank you.
Now, I'm sure all of our listeners and readers on the Shipping News will know who you are because you are an esteemed ABC broadcaster in Western Australia, and you are currently on 720 Drive Show, I think.
That's right.
Have I got the name right?
Thank you for saying esteemed. I think that's generous. yes, it's the Drive program, and I had 12 years doing the morning show before that.
That's really interesting. I've often wondered in the days when I was driving into the city of Perth from Fremantle and listening to you in the morning, and then later I suddenly saw the switch and you went to the afternoon, I thought, that man must be very pleased. I'm assuming he doesn't have to get up at some ungodly hour, and that would be one benefit of moving from morning to afternoon.
It was the entire reason for the decision. I'd done the morning show for a long time and really liked it, but I see no value in getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Absolutely none. And once we'd moved down to Fremantle as well, there was just too much to enjoy. And I also wanted to... You know, I don't know how much longer I'll be on radio. You know, I do have moments of sounding smug and self-satisfied, but I do have other moments when I think people have heard quite enough. So, you know, I really enjoy the Drive program. It's not as serious as radio once was, but I do get to engage and hopefully choose some stories that people are interested in and ask them what they think about it. It's a pretty simple formula, really.
It is, and it's a lovely formula. And I've noted, written somewhere, when I did my Google research, as I don't have a production assistant or research people, Geoff, but there was a lovely phrase I saw written down. You must have come up with it. Curious, civil, let's be better.
Yes.
Now, that seems to be your governing motif, is it? Is it? Right.
I think so. I'm quite good at slogans. I've been.
it's a good slogan.
Maybe I should go into politics. but it is. I am curious, and that is why journalism appealed to me from the time I was a kid.
When you started off, as I understand it, you left high school, you went to university for a short time, and then you got the call to go to Geraldton.
Yeah, that's right.
And you did. What happened there? And tell us what you, if you can still remember it, were thinking as whatever you were, a 17, 18, 19-year-old.
Yeah. I'd originally wanted to be a sports commentator when I was a kid. And I wrote to people like Drew Morfitt at the ABC and had contact with Dennis Cometti when I was a 15-year-old. So I've known Dennis for a long time. And I wanted to be a sports commentator originally, and then I thought maybe life was a bit more broad and a bit more interesting than that, and I didn't imagine I was going to be able to succeed in it. I did start a Bachelor of Arts at UWA and then was given a cadetship at the Geraldton Guardian, and it was just an opportunity to go and see a little bit of the world and begin whatever this thing was, and I really didn't know what it was then. You know, it was
did you have writing skills? Did you fancy yourself as a writer?
yeah I mean, I
a few journalists who do, I think.
Yes I felt comfortable with words and I loved words, and perhaps even today I may well reflect that was the only time in my life that I worked on a newspaper.
Yes.
It's been in television and radio ever since, and probably the written word is that which I like the most but have explored the least.
So you wanted to be a sports broadcaster. You wanted to be able to do what Cometti eventually did so magnificently, call the football, presumably.
Yeah. Sport was everything to me. And I actually stayed in that broad environment till about 1998. And I was working at Wide World of Sports in Melbourne then. So I'd been with Channel 9 for a long time. Got to make these really beautiful documentary style sports segments. So, you know, we would fly to the US Open and do, you know, I got to do really wonderful things. And then I just got to a point where I thought, I think I need to, again, do something more significant. And there was a job going at the 7:30 report in Melbourne. And so I thought, time to leave sport and try something else.
And like, time to leave the commercial sphere and go into the ABC.
Yeah, and really happy. I'm very happy to have worked in both environments.
Yes.
They're not as different as people might think.
My next question.
Maybe they are now. I don't know if they are now. But
then they weren't.
But I really liked, there was an attention to excellence where we worked. And then I came to the ABC where I just had always had this great admiration for, but much of the dynamism seemed to be in the commercial world. And it's very interesting now, I think, that much of the dynamism is at the ABC, and I'm very, very proud of that, you know, broadly across the organisation. But I wanted to, go and do some proper journalism.
I think it's right and proper that people go in different directions in the course of their professional lives.
Sports journalism is great because you ask really fundamental questions of people. How do you feel? How do you feel? What happened? Who won? Who lost? And you actually become quite skilled, I think, at just listening. And it's a great privileged environment to be in. But one of the reasons I left was, there was now, whereas I used to be able to have access to anyone I wanted to, there were now 3 managers, 4 agents, 5 other people standing between us, hoping to tell me what I should be saying rather than me sitting as we are now, just having a conversation with someone.
Yes.
And then producing a piece as a result.
Yes.
Of it.
And no doubt they had to be entirely and fully scripted.
Yeah, and that became tiresome to me. So sport became less interesting to me as I went on.
Now, look, there'll be a number of our listeners this morning listening to this who will then say, Jeff, what were your favourite sports? Say, as a kid, were you a good footballer? Did you love to play basketball? You were quite a tall guy.
Yes, yeah. No, I liked footy, and cricket was my favourite sport. And I was very, this says a lot, really, that my favourite cricketer growing up was John Inverarity and not Rod Marsh or Dennis Lilly, who I loved very much. So I played cricket like John Inverarity when I really wished I'd played cricket like Rod Marsh or Dennis Lilly. So I captained cricket teams, knew how to captain teams well, knew the game well, but then when it came time to save the match, you know, my taciturn anxiety with the bat would generally result in failure, you know. So
that's a bit tough on Invers.
No, not really. I'm sorry, Invers. It was it was I'm thinking 1968 at the Oval when he pads up outside the off stump and could have saved the series but didn't quite manage to. But so these things were very interesting to me when I was a kid. But I kind of broadened out as I went, and much as I loved sport, and truly it was a very privileged experience. But I did learn something which held me in good stead, I think. And it was 1 year we had gone to the US Open.
We're talking tennis?
US Open tennis, and I love tennis. Flew business class to the US Open. Had helicopter ride over Manhattan to shoot some pictures of the skyline. Staying in a beautiful hotel. Walking down to the bar with my more experienced colleagues. And listen to them complain about the mini bar in their room, when I thought it was perhaps the most exciting thing I'd ever seen. And I was, and I knew, and it's probably why I was brought up, but I thought, you are so lucky to be here. Don't ever think that you will have a better experience than this one.
I think that
served me in okay stead, because it's true.
Yeah. Well, they may have all been want to be politicians, though. The way these things seem to work these days.
Maybe they always wanted something a little richer.
Now, and again, before we leave the sport, you're a well-known lover of the Fremantle Dockers.
Yeah.
You've been following them for some time?
Forever. Went to their first... We were living in Melbourne, so we went to their first game that they ever played.
Fantastic.
Against Richmond. And so we were in Melbourne when the Dockers arrived, and we had a daughter at that time, and we sent her off to a little school in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne wearing a Fremantle Dockers raincoat while all the other kids were wearing Hawthorne gear. And to this day, I'm convinced that while some people would think that was cruel parenting, it has bred a resilience into my children. Right. That they are.
Being a Fremantle supporter, as we all know, is character forming.
It is, but I love it. And interestingly, when I gave up the professional involvement with sport and just became a fan, I think I'm happier. I like it better. I like going there. And
just watching the game.
Watching the game and being churlish on Twitter and shouting things out about Dean Margetts that I ordinarily wouldn't. So I like that because that's just the normal experience.
Now, you then move, as you've already indicated, from Wired World of Sports to the 7:30 report on the ABC. And what sort of news stories did you suddenly find yourself doing there? That must have been
a fantastic
cultural change when it came to work you were doing.
It was fantastic. One of the first stories I did was, it was fantastic is not the appropriate word here, but there was a bushfire disaster near Geelong where five firefighters lost their lives. And we sort of pursued an investigation into the circumstances of that. And I was fortunate enough to be nominated for a Walkley Award in a couple of months of getting there. So that was very flattering.
Well, it confirmed the wisdom of your choice.
Well, it was really interesting. And I had some good mentors there who saw what I could do, but also wanted to shape the way I did things in a way that said, continue, go after this, go after this, go after this. If there was a pronouncement from the Vatican that was going to mean a lot to the world's Catholics, I might be pointed to and told, you're going to do that story. And then I would say, but I know nothing about this. And they said, that's why you should go and do it. And those kind of things have really... I remember, in fact, I don't even recall what Pope John Paul's utterance was at this time, other than it was significant. And I remember getting the story to air. We only had a few hours to do it. And I did a really solidly good job. And I walked out of the building and just thought that I'd made the whole thing up. You know, that thing of really? Do I really know enough about this to be entitled to say these things? But you're not expressing an opinion. You're just gathering the opinions of others and the expertise of others and hopefully asking good and appropriate questions. And I guess that is still the essence of what I do.
Mm. So what you do now can be found in all the work you've done because you've stars and looked at sporting codes and all of those things. When you went to 7:30 Report, was it often just like that newsroom today, we want you to do the story on the Pope's latest utterance, or did you produce things that took months or
no weeks? Some things would take time. I also did a lot of they were rather dismissively called color stories, and that it's a little bit like the things that Heather Ewart does on the Back Roads program on ABC now. I really loved and was pretty good at going to places and meeting community and talking to community about what their world looked like. And I'll give you a really silly example of the kind of things that I always loved. I would always like to go into a little country town and go to the fish and chip shop. It could turn up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and it could be closed, and just read the signs on the window to give you a little sense of whether on the weekend there was something important coming up, or there was a raffle where the prize was $100 worth of firewood, or those just little things that might provide a tiny amount of insight into what people thought.
This is like the community notice board.
A little bit. Mm. And I like seeing what on those community notice boards to get a sense. In fact, I remember years and years ago, my daughter was working at Farmer Jack's in Wembley Downs. And I went in one day and I saw on the community notice board that someone had put a notice up there saying, offering friendship services for $10 an hour. Not, as some of your listeners might suspect, anything other than friendship services. And this person was being paid $10 an hour to go and sit in the homes of other people and talk to them. I find those stories interesting. And they are insights into the demand for that, the loneliness that people might feel. And so I'm as interested in that now. Mm. As interested now as I ever have been.
Now, let me ask you about that, because let me say, one of the wonderful things about your Drive program is the the empathy that you bring to all sorts of issues, along the lines of what you've just mentioned, where does that sort of empathy come from? Is it something you were brought up with? Did it come from your parents?
I suppose I was brought up with some of it. But Michael, I've had a very privileged life. You know, I do believe that if given a small amount of luck, the rest of it is up to you to make the most of it. I don't know. I think as a kid, I may have had a reasonably keen awareness of when people were happy or when they weren't happy, or why they weren't happy. I remember if Mum and Dad had a blue about anything, as a little kid, I would be anxious about what that meant and whether it was serious. And I remember Dad taking me for a walk one day. He said, "You do know that mums and dads have disagreements every now and again, and sometimes they raise their voices." And I remember being quite reassured that that was true. And there was nothing in my family circumstance that was in any way dramatic. But I think I've always had a sense of those things, but based largely on how fortunate my own experience has been.
A sense that because you've been fortunate, because you've been privileged, that you really ought to keep an eye out for the circumstances of others?
Oh, yeah. And I was brought up, you know, to believe some sort of fundamental things that other people might find through faith. I think I was brought up to believe these things through my dad's belief in what the Labor Party used to represent.
Oh, right.
Which was, you know, looking after the working person, looking after the person that has not been given the opportunity to have education. You look after people because we need to provide, you know, safety nets of appropriate healthcare so they can then get on with their lives.
Yes.
And not be profoundly disadvantaged because of it. So I don't think those things have ever gone away. I'm a lot less interested in political sides than I ever was. You know, I think that because we see such entrenched positions, the good idea has been lost, or it gets stolen from one side or hidden from the other. And I think that's really disappointing.
I suspect that the observations one that can be made in respect of many eras of politics.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Be particularly opposite at the moment, although the national cabinet that's been dealing with the COVID demands has been very interesting. My own personal sense is these things are good. The sort of unified cabinet in times of terrible stress, but it'll only last so long, I imagine.
Yeah, no, I thought national cabinet's a great idea.
Yes.
And it makes me wonder about the need to have the federal parliament, which is not something I've ever felt before. But when a liberal senator from Queensland last night referred to the Palaszczuk government having its knee on the throat of business, when I heard of the behaviour of the deputy prime minister going to the Melbourne Cup to announce, but obviously on the taxpayer, and while he was there, he announced something that had been announced two or three times previously. I just thought, oh, well, here we are. The crisis has eased and we will return to where we were before. And then, of course, just so people don't think that I'm, you know, pushing one side, the story on 60 Minutes on Sunday night about Labor branch stacking in Victoria. So, you know, those processes, give them half a chance there. Back doing what they do best.
Well, there's an adage for every situation, and the more things change, the more they stay the same.
It's true, but I do like your observation. I do accept that the crisis brings out opportunity.
Yes.
But whether we choose to truly take advantage of that opportunity to build something more substantial is entirely up to us and a leadership, and I'd love to see what that leadership's going to provide.
The world's a fascinating place at the moment. You know, I am just reflecting on not only COVID, which has just changed the economy of the entire world in a couple of months. Mm. Then we have the Black Lives Matter movement once again, and you just alluded to that with the knee on the throat, and the way that has just ignited around the world, so that even in little old remote Perth on Langley Park the other day, last weekend. There were up to 7,000 or 10,000 people, including my young granddaughter, who with school friends went along. You realise that something is a foot in the community. And you're plainly a person who picks up on all of these things. I'm interested in a couple of things. First, how you keep abreast of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you read all sorts of things widely and listen to all sorts of opinions being expressed widely. But then you have to go from wherever you gain that information and how you get it to deciding what's going to happen on your drive program. What sort of way can you present this information to us all? How do you go about both those things?
I used to be more widely read than I am now. What happens in the media is that there is a cycle of activity. So sometimes new things happen, and you're right, COVID-19 is new. A global Black Lives Matter movement, and not just a rally or a protest here or there, that is new. But a lot of the other things are fairly cyclical. So if you're doing local news or community news, there's a certain familiarity, isn't there, that we see. So some of what I know is cumulative, and that is a good thing about having done it for a period of time. I'll give you an example the other day, which I was very pleased about. I lived in Belgium for a couple of years, so I was familiar with King Leopold, knew a bit about King Leopold, and knew that I didn't like him. And then, of course, I was vaguely aware of the King Leopold Rangers. And then I just saw something on Twitter that just pointed out the King Leopold Rangers. And I thought, my goodness, you know, this is a time when I think this would be interesting to try and find someone who can tell me why they're still called the King Leopold Rangers in the Kimberley. And then I saw that Albert Jacob, the former Environment Minister, had 3 years ago begun a process to try and change the name, and I wondered why. His family is Belgian. His grandfather went to the Congo in, I presume, the 1930s or 40s, and his father was born there. So I thought, this is an interesting time. Now, I wouldn't have done this story in 2019 because nothing would have sparked this kind of curiosity the way these events have done now. So I had Albert Jacob on the program talking about King Leopold. I told the audience a little bit about King Leopold. I knew that Alexander Forrest had said, let's call it the King Leopold Rangers on the basis of the king's an explorer, okay? He can have them. Which is, you know, completely unsatisfying. And then obviously this man whose behaviours in Africa led in many ways to the death of millions of Congolese, now over these ancient indigenous lands has his name there. It's profoundly inappropriate. So I just asked the audience how they feel about that. And because their response was also quite interested, and a couple of people from up north had no idea who King Leopold was or what that represented, and I wanted to get in touch with Ben Wyatt, the Aboriginal Affairs Minister, and say, hey, how stupid is this? And to be completely fair, this has been in train for some time. Yes. They didn't like the name, and they were wanting to do something about it. But there is never a better time than to ask the Aboriginal Affairs Minister to come on the program and answer questions. Are you planning to get rid of this or are you not? And then he came on the radio and said, King Leopold is gone. Now, I mean, that is... all I did was nudge something. And I work at the ABC, so I'm not working in a commercial environment where I'm employed to express strong opinions about every subject or condemn politicians by calling them stupid or hitting the easy gets of listener outrage. But people will know over, you know, 14 or 15 years. They know essentially what I believe in, and that's, you know, broadly those things of civility, curiosity, and let's do it better, I suppose.
Well, it is. It's more than a slogan, but as a slogan, it's good.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, so you've been in radio, and I read somewhere that you got this opportunity when John Fain in Melbourne went on holidays.
Yeah.
And you ran his program for a while. So Had you had any preparation for taking on this sort of?
No, none at all. And I'd probably still argue that I'm a better maker of, I would hope, good television reports than I'm a radio presenter. I just haven't done that for years because this is so much more spontaneous and interesting to me. I don't have the patience that I once had for those things. No, I had no experience. I'd come back from Europe having been the correspondent for a couple of years, so I knew how to talk. And I just loved it. And I think one of the things that I find most attractive about it, in the early 90s, I pitched a couple of comedy shows to Channel 9, a couple of situation comedy shows that I'd written because I loved comedy,
Isn't that
yes. Isn't that disturbing when you've so listened really, all these years and you say, I didn't realise you liked comedy. yeah, but I do.
I have to listen to your program more closely.
Well, yes, I've always found you unfunny, Jeff, I think it's true that don't stand between me and a punchline or a something that amuses me. And I suppose when I look broadly at why I do what I do, I do enjoy the engagement. But I think what I have on my Twitter handle is that I'm easily amused. And I love laughing.
Something a teacher once wrote on a school report.
Yeah, of course, of course. But I've always found, it doesn't matter how desperate the circumstance, I've always found something in it, and even in my own personal life, if there have been difficulties, that have amused me. And if you find amusement, I think it's a way of understanding the world.
Yes.
And also being able to understand in a way that says, if I'm laughing, then I think I'm okay.
It's a great capacity, and we really need our comedians in these difficult times.
Yeah, I didn't aspire to be a comedian or anything like that. It's and Channel 9, probably quite sensibly said, thank you, this is slightly amusing, but I can't see how we'd do anything with it. So I stopped looking out the window then and then wanted to concentrate more on...
This is a big, big question, and there's no answer to it, but television versus radio, the future of... The media is seemingly under great pressure at the moment.
Yeah.
You can break it down in all sorts of ways. News Corp Australia have refashioning their empire in Australia. Lots of local jobs have gone. Mastheads have disappeared or shrunk. Things are going digital and not print. Seven West Media in Western Australia looks like it's up for sale, if you read the press closely. You get all of these liaisons between media outfits to produce investigative reports. You've got Facebook and Amazon, you've got the whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you have any take on all of this? Will it all survive?
No, I don't think it will survive. I think free-to-air television is in a very difficult place. Our newspapers are in a very difficult place. They're not making any money at all. The only reason that what's been amazing about radio is that radio is showing a kind of resilience that radio has always shown. So when television arrived, that was the death of radio. When digital technologies arrived, that was the death of radio. Well, it's not, because radio continues to be interactive. You can talk to me and I can talk to you. If something's happening live, I can tell you. We don't have the pictures, but increasingly we do now. Is if you look at what the ABC has become, it's not a radio network and a television in the corner of the room anymore. It's now Australia's leading online news source. And even though News Corp particularly has railed against the ABC going into these other spaces, railed against it, saying essentially we deny them money, and that is to me the fundamental reason why the ABC is just pilloried in those environments all the time. We stop them making money. And there's an argument that says, well, you shouldn't be stopping them making money. My argument is, if you keep doing, do it better and maybe you'll make some money. But we have a charter and a responsibility to provide information to the Australian people, who are no longer just watching the 7 o'clock news anymore. they are increasingly doing what you will do and I will do today, and that will be look at a screen to get our information from there. We have to be where the technology is, otherwise we really are irrelevant. But it is interesting and reassuring that even though we were looking at graphs years ago that, you know, were pointing to just radio, and it's not just the ABC, you know, heading south quickly, there's a stability about it. What radio looks like 10 years from now, I mean, I'm looking at it selfishly saying, I think while I'm there, it will still look like this. But 10 years from now, I think we will be choosing everything we want at a time we want. And increasingly, as Facebook and Amazon and Google aspire, they want to tailor information services based entirely on who you are, what you like, and then what you need to buy. Now, I hope that's not true. I hope that that is not just a relentless path towards information being manipulated this way. And maybe we can take a small amount of comfort, people who think like this anyway, from the fact that Donald Trump was very much of the view that traditional news organizations like the New York Times would essentially die because he thought they were irrelevant and he didn't like what they were saying. Well, they have redoubled their efforts, I think, to be a better newspaper and to be a better fact-checking, not just in a paper sense, but you can get the New York Times across all your media platforms, that there is growth opportunity for former newspapers in this space if they are prepared to be what they have been at their best, and that is, you know, keen assessors of the world around them.
So, Jeff, imagine there was a young bloke just enrolled at UWA to do a arts degree, 18-year-old, and gets a call from a media outlet.
So Geraldton Guardian.
Geraldton Guardian, there's a name we could summons up and say, listen, son, we've got a job you might be interested in here. And you go home and you tell mum and dad, do they encourage the young Jeff Hutchison today to take that opportunity in the media with everything that's happened and happening to it?
That's a good question. I asked my kids if they were interested. My kids are smart, much smarter than me. I asked my kids if they were interested in it. And I think the only thing I could sell them in the end was, it's bloody great fun. And it has been incredibly great fun to be a witness to and sometimes a participant in interesting things. But I would now look at my own kids who are, you know, 27 and 22. At 27, nearly 23, and I think there are more important things for them to do.
Well, that's an interesting.
Yeah, I know, because in some respects, being the observer is not quite satisfying enough.
There are other things to do, Jeff Hutchison.
I look at my kids and this thing about privileged opportunity. You know, we came over here, went to Shenton, excellent state school. I love state schools. I believe in state schools. They did really well there. They're really smart. And all I've ever said to them is don't waste that which you've been given. And I see that they've got a greater capacity to be involved in changing things and improving things. And I've had a really good time bringing things to people's attention and observing things, but I think there could have been something more substantial.
Jeff, this has been a really lovely discussion. I've enjoyed it. I always, with people who understand Fremantle, finish with a question about, not do you love it, because I know you do, but why do you love Frio? So why did you come here and what is it that keeps you here?
Well, I didn't know much, apart from barracking for the Eastern Randall Football Club when I was a kid. I didn't know much about it when I was a kid. I've been away from Western Australia for a long time. When we came back to Perth, I was interested in Fremantle but didn't know much about it. it was curious. I'd never imagined I was going to come back to Western Australia. And where we lived up the coast was fine when the kids were growing up because we wanted to get them, you know, live as close to the school zone as we could be. But if it turns out that this is where I'm going to be as probably for the rest of my life, then I have to be here because it is the most textured, interesting part of this state. It draws people. I find, and I don't know what other people think about this, this kind of hippie reference I find is quite tiresome because I actually think there's such breadth. There's such breadth here that I don't think I find necessarily in other parts of Perth. When I was growing up, it was a white skin, white bread place. And that is changing. And I'm really glad that's changing. But it's changed quite slowly. And I've lived in lots of other places that have been infinitely more diverse, and I've liked them better for it. So this place provides a lot of those things. And I'm also interested that community things matter so much here. So there's big picture stuff, which I think is very interesting. Let's look at another day to celebrate this place rather than Australia Day. I love the fact that the community has the argument, the pros and cons. I like the fact that there are tensions as people try and work out what is best for this place. And at the moment, you might have a local administration that says, well, let's present ourselves as this and this. But then you've got shop owners that say, my God, we've got to get people into our shops. And I really like being part of that. I mean, I would look at that with a certain amount of interest in the future as not an observer. I mean, it's too boring to say, isn't it? But when I'm done with this, I wonder if even going to local, trying to get on local council would be interesting just to see if I could play a role, but one in which it was, I'm not on a side. And I think that's one thing that 14 years, you know, I'm on the side of, yes, I'm a humanist and a, you know, let's be civil, let's do better, all those kind of things. But I'd be interested to see if you could bring disparate points to the table and see if, okay, it's your turn now, but it's their turn next, and it's their turn next. And whether that would be a really interesting challenge in a place like this where people care. I think that's it. I think people care more here than anywhere else I've been in WA.
Well, Jeff, that's a beautiful answer, and you've also
I probably want to take it back now.
No, you've answered my implied last question, and that is, I wonder what you might do with yourself next. And on that note...
Yeah, well, I don't know. In fact, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to, if I've got any professional ability to assist not-for-profits when I get into retirement, or, you know, if work yes. finishes the next couple of years, I will very happily throw whatever expertise I've got into those places. Probably, that's probably a truer reflection of what I think I will do rather than, shall I go on council? Or shall I try and get on council? Which, you know, maybe that might just be an ego thing, but the other one's serious. I'd like to provide assistance to
contribute
people
in other spaces for the experience you've got.
Yeah, yes. Very much so.
Jeff, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you, Mike. I've really enjoyed it.